Hello and welcome to this month's Centre for Brexit Studies podcast with me, Jessica Guy, Centre Director Professor Alex de Ruyter and Researcher David Hearn. Hello both and thanks for taking part in the show.
Hello Jess.
Morning Jess. Thanks.
This month we battled against the beast from the east and embarked on our second series of Brexit roadshows, visiting Basildon, Great Yarmouth, Stoke-on-Trent, Doncaster as the top Leave voting constituencies. We also visited Four Oaks in Sutton Coldfield to hear the views of voters in a constituency which experienced a near 50-50 split in opinion. Professor de Ruyter, you formed part of the panel for all of these events. Could you elaborate on any of your initial findings?
Thanks, Jess. If our findings are any guide, then the country still remains deeply divided. And there is little sign to say that people's views have changed from the decision they made on the 23rd of June 2016. Key themes coming through the research from Leave voters across all these areas has been that wanting complete control of sovereignty, reducing immigration, to the extent that a number of participants thought that when the vote result was declared that migrants would go home, rebuilding links with the Commonwealth and not giving money to Brussels were all apparent. Many of these same individuals also expressed frustration and surprise, or indeed bewilderment, that we'd made the vote to leave, but yet we hadn't already left the EU.
So for me, one of the major factors was the extent to which identity played a key role for many Leave voters, particularly thinking of Four Oaks and Sutton Coldfield here. The overwhelming majority of our audience felt a keen sense of Englishness rather than Britishness above any other identity that they had, more than a local identity or indeed a regional one. I was struck by the fact that for many, the EU appeared to pose a threat to this identity, perhaps by virtue of it being seen as a primarily political rather than a purely economic project. There was a clear desire for greater sovereignty, as Alex has said. What was less clear, I felt, was a detailed discussion of what the costs and benefits of regulatory harmonisation are, and in what areas the audience felt that regulatory divergence would be appropriate. In this sense, I think the debate was still somewhat, some of the views were somewhat incoherent, but there are clear ramifications for discussions within the EU about subsidiarity.
Thank you both. From a personal perspective for me, it was interesting that in the top Leave voting constituencies, we mostly seemed to encounter Remainers. In fact, it wasn't until Stoke-on-Trent that we seemed to get more Leave voters' opinions. I'd like to play a clip from the roadshow here, provided by a local Leave voter.
No, I think actually the UK actually been destroyed as an entity. We would have become regions of the European Union. As you know, we are in the West Midlands region. I think that was the whole idea, to break countries down completely into regions and then leads and then become part of the European Union super state. It's simple as that, you know.
Listening to that back, would you say this was fairly typical of the attitudes we have previously experienced, or was it different?
Well, I think the sentiments expressed there by our respondent, in a way, are fairly typical of those generally older people who sort of hark back almost with a nostalgic fondness to before Britain joined the EU in 1973. For many of these people, it appeared that joining somehow was a stab in the back to the Commonwealth, and that now that we've left the EU, or I should say in the process of leaving the EU, that these links will somehow be restored or indeed strengthened. A fundamental problem with this sort of approach, though, or belief in an adoring Anglosphere, if you like, is that the said Commonwealth countries themselves have moved on. An example being a quote given by the Australian Minister for Trade and Tourism, Mr. Stephen Chobo, in an address to the European Parliament in 2016, where he stated that negotiations between Australia and the EU were significantly more advanced than any discussions between Australia and Britain, and therefore, whilst Britain was in the process of trying to leave the EU, any trade deal between Australia and Britain would be at least 3 years away. And most tellingly, in terms of this idea that Commonwealth countries have moved on, that for him, in many respects at least, His words, "The special relationship between Australia and the UK is a relic of yesteryear." And here is an important point that I think in terms of the UK debate we don't recognise enough, in that these other countries largely are regionally embedded in their own parts of the world. So for Australia and New Zealand, it is largely the Asia-Pacific region that is their focus. But none of this seems to have filtered through into the Brexit debate here in the UK.
Anything to add, David? Sorry.
I can only agree with Alex here. I think there was a clear divide in opinion for most of the Leave, within most of the Leave voters that we spoke to. Older Leave voters in particular showed a much greater desire to return to, quotes, how things were prior to 1973, and felt, again, that we'd somehow abandoned Commonwealth allies in order to join the EU. Younger Leave voters, in contrast, were much more concerned with everyday challenges and some of the challenges presented in their view by migration.
What were the big differences or similarities between the constituencies visited on this round of roadshows and the events which took place last year?
Two aspects. The first one being that in terms of Leave voters that we have spoken to, say Stoke as an example, what has been most striking for me is the admission or acknowledgement, if you like, that the economic pain of leaving the EU would be, quote, worth it, due to the regaining of sovereignty as they see it. Now, this represents something of a development in terms of saying that this is not to say that Leave voters are somehow ignorant of the economic cost of leaving the EU or don't believe it, but for them, it is a triumph of politics over economics, if you like. And that similar sentiments were expressed in terms of people in Hull saying that we feel constrained by EU red tape, and once we leave the EU, we'll be able to adopt a can-do approach and generate business opportunities elsewhere. Of course, this overlooks the fact that any notion of trying to negotiate a trade agreement with any part of the world necessarily involves trading off sovereignty. The only way, of course, that a nation could have complete sovereignty in today's world is if it chooses to cut itself off from economic relationships with the rest of the world. Britain is not a country that can afford to do this. A country that has to import over half of its food requirements is going to have to strike some position and therefore necessarily compromise a sense of its sovereignty if it wishes to make deals with the EU or the rest of the world. The second thing that was interesting in terms of our visit to Basildon, for example, in encountering some Remain voters, was the almost disdain or recoiling from any sense of Englishness, due again to perceptions of Englishness being associated with St George or football hooliganism or indeed crypto-fascism. This to me was quite striking. And if the Brexit phenomenon is interpreted in some sense of a manifest English identity trying to assert itself, then it is clear that some effort needs to be made to engage and acknowledge the views of people who feel in such a fashion. If the semblance of an English identity is not to be seen as a purely inward-looking one and all the risks that entails.
I've been struck by the sheer diversity of views that we've encountered on the roadshows. Although a desire for lower levels of immigration has been a clear common thread across most Leave voters that we've spoken to, it was rarely the sole issue. Views ranged from a sort of rather inchoate sense of this island is full to a much more nuanced question over to what extent have everyday public services, perhaps, or housing, become under pressure due to rising population. Even more important than migration, however, has been the pervasive lack of trust shown by participants across all the roadshows. From Sutton Coldfield, there was a clear sense that we are the only ones that play by the rules, and that other countries in Europe could not be trusted to enforce European directives. They felt that this meant there was not a level playing field and that people were taking advantage of the UK without reciprocating that. In the Black Country, in Bloxwich, for example, we encountered a much more general lack of trust in authority and a sense of having been almost abandoned by the UK government. So there's this trust issue as well, which I felt was extremely important.
Thank you both for your views there, and thank you for your time today and taking part in this month's podcast. Further information on the Brexit Roadshow and the key findings thus far will be presented at the annual conference, with reports and other information available via the website at www.bcu.ac.uk/centre-for-brexit-studies, or find us on Twitter at BCU_CBS. Thank you.